Hi, this is Nancy Clare, and thank you for joining me for the 138th episode of Speaking of Mysteries. Today I'm talking to Naomi Hirahara, whose Hiroshima Boy, her seventh and last Mas Arai mystery, has just been released by Prospect Park Books. One of the things I love about mystery fiction, a love I think that's shared by many, if not most, of the genre's fans, is that the stories can take you places you might not otherwise go. Such is the case with Hiroshima Boy, as Mas takes us back to the city where his family was from and where he lived when the bomb was dropped. It's a remarkable journey and a poignant coda to the story arc of the Japanese-American gardener who toiled in Southern California for 60-odd years solving mysteries along the way. Here's Naomi Hirahara. Welcome back to Speaking of Mysteries. This is Nancy Clare, and today we're speaking to Naomi Hirahara, whose latest number 7 in her Mas Arai series, Hiroshima Boy, has just been released. Welcome, Naomi.
Thanks for having me, and happy birthday to both of us. happy book birthday to both of us.
That's true. Thank you very much. This is your seventh and last Mas Arai mystery. And in this novel, he's 86 years old. And Arai-san, yes, as he's called once he arrives, makes what I can only call a pilgrimage to Hiroshima, the city where his family is from and where he lived when the bomb was dropped, although he wasn't born there. So why did you decide to end the series in Hiroshima?
I knew from the get-go that if this was to be a series, and I must say, when I wrote the first, I didn't imagine that there'd be six books that would follow. But there's like a flashback in the first book to Hiroshima, and so I knew that it had to return there.
One of the things that always surprises me about Mas is how his self-image is so at odds with how others see him. And this has to be an intentional construct on your part, and I'm just curious why this is important in understanding him as a reader.
In some ways, it is at odds, but I think for the outsider, he's just unknowable. He's, for various reasons, some of it's just like because of his class. You know, he's a gardener, he's a blue-collar worker. And so I think he's placed in a category, right? And a lot of us, especially, you know, in many countries, in terms of people who work for us, we don't really, they don't have an identity, they don't have a name. And so it was really important for me to have this book that was totally from this unknown person's point of view, and his name, you know, is Mas Arai. And also, I guess people, like, have certain stereotypes of, like, Japanese-American men, you know, that there's stoic, you know, and Mas is a man of few words, but some of it's just because of his background. You know, he grew up in Japan, and then he came to America when he was a teenager, an older teenager. So he never really acquired a language that he could really master. So words aren't necessarily his forte, but he has a lot of opinions. He's smart. He's very observant. And I think that's what's the beauty of a sleuth like that. This is just for his very survival. He's had to watch people very carefully. And I think sometimes people of power and privilege, you know, we don't have to pay so much attention sometimes because we just figure that people are going to pay attention to us, right? So in that way, he makes a really delightful sleuth to write about. And I think many of us at different times, you know, we do feel like ignored, you know, for whatever reason. Maybe it's our gender or just be, you know, there's a lot of different situations in LA where you, where anybody could actually feel like an outsider. So, you know, I tried to infuse all those feelings in a person like Moss so that we could have more empathy, you know. And, of course, Moss is modeled after my own father. You know, they had very different personalities, but I think the whole notion of, you know, you come, you don't feel totally rooted in either country. You don't, you know, in terms of family, it's a little bit broken and fractured. So, you know, you, essentially you have to be super independent. You can't just, you know, if someone's mean to you or whatever, you know, you can't just react all the time or else you'll be totally exhausted. So, yeah, so that's why Moss is a little bit like a curmudgeon, you know, on the outside. But I think it's a protection, you know, in a way.
Well, you anticipate my next question. Moss certainly doesn't wear his heart on his sleeve, but he is not emotionally inert. In fact, he feels very deeply and has a soft spot for the dispossessed and out of place. And in this particular story, in Hiroshima Boy, it is the cat that he meets on this island mm-hmm. next to the city, and Ray, mm-hmm. a woman who's clearly mm-hmm. on the edge.
Mm-hmm. I love, if you read like Japanese folk tales, there's often some kind of distressed animal. It could be a sparrow. There's a story I loved as a kid. I actually translated it when I was in elementary school called Tongue-Cut Sparrow. And then there's another one with the crane, you know, a crane that's saved from a hunter. And there's, like, blessings that come to that person as a result of their kindness to an animal. So I just love that folklore. So, and I actually went to an island outside of Hiroshima. The real name is called Ninoshima. In the book, it's called Ino Island. So, and then we ran into a lot of stray cats. So that was kind of like the inspiration, you know, actually seeing the cat and then this link to folklore and then just wondering where, how Moss would, you know, treat something. Like he in a way, he's like, this is a nasty cat, but he's there in Hiroshima to bring the ashes of his best friend, Haruo. And Haruo, I mean, I think this is a very well-known technique. If you're kind of dealing with this semi-unlikable character, make his best friend like this incredible, you know, person, lovable person. And if that lovable person is so connected to this curmudgeon, there must be something good about this curmudgeon. So, you know, so Haruo, his best friend, is definitely a foil. But he's dead, you know, in the book. So it's kind of nice that, you know, he, Moss treats this cat as if it's Haruo. So Haruo, in a way, has a presence in the mystery and novel as well. And with Ray, yeah, I mean, that wasn't, you know, as we write these things, it's not necessarily an intentional thing. It just sort of organically comes out. And in Japan, even though women have become more empowered than in the past, but, you know, it is, there's a lot of sexism there. And divorce, you know, is becoming more common, but there's still a stigma, you know, with a woman who's a single mom over there. So it just so happened, like, the victim, this dead boy's mother, you know, that's the victim in the mystery, Ray, she kind of takes over the book. And I think that's how Moss really learns about the victim as well, is through the eyes of his mother.
You mentioned this, and I had actually put it into one of my questions, which is the concept of otherness and exile. And it's prominent mm-hmm. in all of the Masaryk novels, but especially so, I felt especially so in Hiroshima Boy.
he feels like an exile regardless of where he is. You know, he's a U.S. citizen, mm-hmm. but he feels apart when he's in his home in Altadena, mm-hmm. where he's been part of the community for, you know, 60 years. And he's mm-hmm. not doesn't feel like he's part of Hiroshima, even though he recognizes many of the streets and understands the language. So I think that idea of exile is very important in literature, and mm-hmm. gives an added just makes this mystery that much more interesting.
Mm-hmm. I think definitely, you know, it just adds this different point of view. I mean, I think you're right, it's prevalent in all mysteries, in The Great Gatsby, right? The outsider who's enamored actually with the insider and trying to figure out things and there's a revelation that things he imagined are not really true. And I think in mysteries, that's definitely, I mean, usually the detective is the outsider in some way, you know. And probably even in a cozy where you think that this person is part of the very tight community, there's something about that person that makes them either suspect or gives them some distance, I guess, to see things how they really are. So it's great, again, to have a person like Moss, because he could be in American society and make observations about it and critiques even, and then the same. And he goes to Japan, and again, because he is, you know, on the borders, on the edges, he could also make, you know, sociological or critiques about Japanese society. So, you know, I love that. I mean, it's probably related to my own upbringing, because my mother is from Japan, and I had to do a lot of cultural interpretation for her. So I think, you know, we children of immigrants, we always have to have a firm grasp of the dominant culture. You know, we have to understand how everything works. But then we see things in our household like this very unique and isolated way of looking at things. And we have to, you know, go back and forth, these two worlds. So I think it's something I grew up with. And I like that whole notion of, you know, these days, global is kind of a bad word. But, I mean, to function, because of technology, because of, you know, so many factors, people just traveling more, I think we are exposed to different ways of thinking. So I think, so it's very natural for me to put that in my books.
I'm going to take a little digression here, because you mentioned something about the outsider, and mystery writers, many mystery writers I've spoken to have said, well, you know, I always felt a little bit like an outsider, and yet, it is a very affable and connected community, and you're very active in it. You're very active in Sisters in Crime, and I see your posts on Facebook about tours that you take, and I wanted to ask you about what I see as a healthy growth in other voices coming into the mystery writing mm-hmm. community. Joe Ide has had two fabulous mm-hmm. books, and I'm not just talking about Japanese Americans or Asian Americans, which would include Steph Cha, but other people of color and different sexual orientations. Is that growing? I mean, I think it's a good thing, so, you know, we'll just sort of start from that premise. Is it growing, or is that just, am I looking at it through rose-colored spectacles?
I think it is growing. I mean, I've been in this business since 2004, and it seems like it does kind of come in waves. And there was waves like before me, and Sujata Masi had written, who's part Indian, East Indian, and part white, and she was writing a series, the Ray Shimura series about a multiracial Japanese American woman who was dealing with antiques. So there's a lot, and then S.J. Roseanne had a Chinese American sleuth in her series too, Lydia Chin. But I think I think there's high points, and I think we're perhaps getting into a high point now. But I remember when I was starting out just writing, I was just reading so many African-American writers, some who have passed away, like Chester Himes, but also, of course, Walter Mosley, but also Gar Anthony Haywood, who's from Southern California, Gary Phillips. And and even for specifically related to my career, I was reading like these Blanche series. Barbara Neely had written them about an African American maid in the South who was solving crimes, and there's a lot about her. There's social observations and about her community that are, it's very rich with all of those things. So actually, I approached Barbara's agent, and that's how I, got my agent. So I think that must have been maybe in the 90s. There were a lot of African-American writers. And then it started to get less and less for whatever reason. So unfortunately, it does, I think, kind of go up and down, but I am seeing more, definitely, and it's really encouraging me, like in terms of Asian Americans, like Henry Chang and Ed Lin, and of course Steph and Joe Ide. And I do think mystery readers are very curious people. So they do want this experience of entering in a new world. There's still like some obstacles to kind of introducing these worlds to our readers if it hasn't been done before. And, if people find success with it, then of course everybody kind of gets involved. I think that's like with Tony Hillerman when he was writing his Navajo series. I believe one editor said, well, these are great, but you got to get rid of the Navajos, But I think through his success with his characters, there's been a lot more sleuths that are like on the res or Native American. So we'll see. I am hopeful, but it's hard for any writer to get into this business. But if somebody's writing about a sleuth that mainstream America hasn't seen before, I think it's a little bit tougher. And I think people who, especially in the LGBTQ community, it's like, will people not part of that community read that? Because we need people, I can't have just like Asian Americans read my mysteries, right? It's just a very limited audience. So it's like, how do we write about these communities that we know so intimately, but other, mainstream America does not know them? And how do they get interested to read about them? So I think that's the big challenge.
Well, then how do your readers respond? It's not just your Moss Array series. You have another series, Hold That Thought, because we're gonna talk about that. But how do your, especially in this age of social media, where a reader and a fan can reach out to almost any writer, how do your fans respond? You must have them all over the world.
It's really, you know, you never know how your book is really going to be received until it's out there. You know, I figured, I did know, okay, loosely there'd be, we have a great fan base with mystery, so some mystery readers and then maybe some Japanese Americans would follow it, you know. But then there's people who, there's a lot of regional support that I get from probably, you know, all along the West Coast, but in Los Angeles. There's some nostalgia, you know, people remember the heyday of the Japanese-American gardener in the 60s and 70s. Many people had Japanese gardeners. So I think they respond there. And there's this whole notion of history. People are very, very much interested in Los Angeles history. And, you know, because I'm a former journalist, I just naturally write about communities and geography. And I think people have really embraced that. I think him being older, there's pros and cons, but definitely a pro is, you know, everybody has that uncle, you know, that comes over from Thanksgiving and is kind of cranky and, you know, like, okay. And so I think that's a certain archetype that's very universal, that all across the world, that they, you know. And I do think, you know, there are some stereotypes about the Japanese as being very aesthetic. I mean, some of it is rooted to it, you know, there's some actual, you know, link and reason for that. They do have a strong sense of, like, shibui, which means kind of very simple, you know, more negative space. Those kind of aesthetics, I think, are very attractive to people, especially people in the West, where if we have a piece of paper, we want to adorn the whole thing, right? And just the having such a different aesthetic sensibility is intriguing to us. So some people so respond to it out of more like they have the stereotype of Japanese gardens or what, or they have a natural affinity for them. So that's how they come to the mysteries too, which is fine, you know, so what I try is to show the reality, like you may think a Japanese man is like this, but actually there's all these kind of conflicting feelings. There's affection, there's thought, you know, there's a lot more complexity that people don't acknowledge until they kind of read the mystery.
I'm going to also now harken back to something you mentioned. I think it might be one thing to decide that a series is going to be 7 books long, and I think I read that you somewhere that you had if you could make your character into a series, that you were thinking in terms of 7 books. But it's quite a different thing when the 7th novel is printed, bound, and in readers' hands. And how do you feel that you're ending a series?
One is relief, in the sense that I didn't want the series to completely sputter out when it ended. You know, I wanted it to be an intentional ending. It's kind of like those TV shows you see, like, they've totally jumped the shark, and, you know, it's like, why didn't they end this sooner? You know, I didn't want anybody, well, I mean, you know, people might still feel that way, but I didn't want that to be the reason why to end a series. What I'm working on now, I'm actually part of a team that's trying to adapt my first mystery into an independent film. And it's going to be very different. It's set in the 1960s. Moss is in his 30s. His wife is still alive, and she's pregnant. So it's a very, in some ways, a different book, but a different story in some ways. But just that I'm able to still walk around Moss's world, and this is a way for new people to come to the series. It's, you know, so it's not a complete cut for me, You know, it's more like I could sigh, you know, have a breath of relief, but also kind of take Moss into a different medium. So that's very exciting.
Well, that's where Moss is going, to a different medium and back in the past. But I know that you're still writing, and I know you have another series. So I'm wondering what's on the horizon, printed word wise.
I'm working on a new book. I don't think it's going to be a series. It might be a standalone. But it's a historical, and it's based on, I also write nonfiction, and I recently finished a book with a friend. We're co-writers, and it's called Life After Manzanar, and it was done for the Manzanar History Association as well as Heyday Books in Berkeley. So it tracks people as they were released from Manzanar. The camp that incarcerated Japanese Americans in the Owens Valley. And so a great number of people went to Chicago, and Chicago went from 400 Japanese Americans to 20,000. And when I was doing research, there's these fascinating government reports, you know, people were getting into trouble. There wasn't enough a lot of young people went in their 20s without their parents at first. And there was, and of course it's Chicago, so there's gambling and other kinds of illicit activity, and it just fascinated me. And I think a crime writer, you know, we're always attracted to the dark or the criminal. And I was going, wow, you know, I really need to investigate. You know, this is would be a great setting for a thrill, you know, kind of. When I say thriller, I don't mean, you know, like espionage or anything huge, but kind of like a historical thriller. So that's what I'm working on right now. And she'll still be a woman from L.A. And I think that's one thing I told myself after I finished the Moss series, that I really want probably all, if not most of my books from now, be from a woman's point of view. So that's one thing I think I'll be doing more of.
Well, we'll look forward to it, and I will put a link to your Manzanar book. I saw that it was released, and from your mouth to God's ear on people reading historical books on history.
We both have a passion for that, right?
We do, and there's just, and to me, I try not to talk about my book too much, but for me, it was an origin story. I remember I pitched it to one agent, and he said, well, maybe you just want to do a book on celebrities and politics. And I said, no. I want to do a story about when it began. I you know, like in the case of Manzanar, which if you've never seen it, it's literally in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the Owens Valley. It you cannot envision a more desolate place in California, I think. There's something very intriguing and engaging, and maybe it's a writer's perspective, or like I'm also a former journalist. You never lose that. It's a curiosity, and however you channel it, and in your case, you've channeled this segment of Southern California history, the Japanese American experience, for good and for bad, in this part of the world, especially in the San Gabriel Valley, and it's fascinating. And I wish you a lot of luck in setting something in Chicago. I think that would be very cool because people don't generally associate the Japanese American experience with Chicago. I didn't.
Yeah, I like to surprise people. I think with my books, you know, I want someone to come to it thinking that they know the topic, but then kind of being whisked away, and it's like, no, this is taking a turn that I didn't expect. And I think that's the fun part of being a writer, having people, like, and taking people on that tour. It's really exciting to me.
Well, the fun part of being a reader is getting one of your new books. That's for sure.
Thank you.
Thanks again, Naomi, for the time. And once again, happy pub day, happy book birthday tomorrow. And I look forward to talking to you about your next novel.
Thank you so much, Nancy.